Hello and welcome to the Talking Food with Bidfood podcast, your go-to source for the latest industry insights. I'm Amelia, your host for this episode that we're dubbing the Fresh Takeover, as we'll be delving into some of the most exciting current and emerging trends in the fresh food industry. Joining me today are two incredible guest speakers who are experts in their field. We've got Jodie Gampson, Marketing Manager for Bidfresh, the fresh food arm of Bidcorp, and Natalie Hood, Director of Sales at Direct Seafoods. Today we'll explore what's shaping the future of fresh food and how these trends may be impacting consumer choices. So get ready for a deep dive into the world of fresh food. Hi Jodie, thank you for joining us today on the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What fresh food trends are you most excited about right now?
Well, I think the one that excites me the most is mind, mood and body. It was one that we identified as part of the 2024 Bidfresh Fresh Trends. And it is all about prioritising healthier lifestyle choices. There's lots of noise at the moment about ultra processed foods. There's not a day that goes by that we don't see something in the news about that and how that impacts our long term health. And in recent years, people have just become a lot more aware of the health aspects and calorie content of their food and drink. People aren't just looking at the calories anymore. They're looking at the nutritional well-being and how that actually affects their physical health and how it also impacts their gut and their mind. I do definitely think that the two are quite intrinsically linked. So people are actively making decisions that are going to help them feel good and also enhance their well-being. Whatever we put into our body is really important, and it's evident across all different age ranges. We're looking after ourselves more now than what we have done before.
Thanks, Jodie. That was really interesting to hear your insight on that. Hi, Natalie. Thanks for joining us today on the podcast. Same question to you. What kind of fresh food trends are you most excited about right now?
Hi, Amelia. Thanks for having me on today. Bit like Jodie, really. I think it's health and well-being. Health and well-being is so big right now. And fish, obviously, you know, we're fish specialists. It's probably the healthiest protein you can eat. They're great sources. Fish and shellfish are great sources of many vitamins and minerals. You've got like your omega-3 packed oily fish like mackerel and salmon, and then you've got your white fish like cod, haddock and coley, which are really low in fat when you compare them to, you know, red meats or, you know, and certainly to a lot of the processed foods that Jodie's been talking about. And there's been a lot of research on it. You know, it's out there for everyone to look at and to promote. You know, I mean, Seafish, which is one of the big bodies in the UK, they recently commissioned some research which said that increasing consumption of fish across England has the potential to significantly reduce the number of cases of diseases such as cancer and type 2 diabetes. So I think we're very fortunate that that's the product and the protein that we sell, because I think the health benefits are so widely documented. I mean, healthy balanced diet is supposed to include two portions of fish a week. And they also say that swapping, you know, red meat to sort of forage fish, which is kind of your smaller fish, like your herrings and your sardines, it's got the potential to dramatically decrease death rates from sort of non-communicable diseases. So I think definitely health and well-being. I think there's a crisis in our country right now with people's health, and I think it's really sad that a lot of people they're not adventurous enough to try fish. I think they're quite scared of it. We've obviously got this massive reliance on five key species, but then you look at the continent and you look at the variety that they eat, and actually far healthier. Everyone knows about the Mediterranean diet, and we've got an absolute plethora of native fish from all around our UK shores, and it also really ticks the provenance box. So I'm excited that we continue to push that and push those benefits, because it's great for us.
I'd just like to add one more thing to that about protein and how it's a growing area of consumer preference. And don't be afraid to lean away from the typical protein sources. I think we've got so many plant-based options like beans, lentils, chickpeas. There's some amazing recipes that you can incorporate those plant-based proteins into. And there's a surprisingly high level of protein in them per 100 grams. We do have a job to do to help educate consumers to make more informed choices, to get them eating more fish, get people moving away from ultra-processed food. And anything that you're going to consider on your menus, just make sure you consult any dietitians and nutritional information first.
Thanks, Jodie. Natalie, do you mind just telling us about the species that you feel I think you said there was five species that you felt like we're quite reliant on, or consumers are quite reliant on. Could you talk more about that?
Yeah, it's really well documented that the big five really hasn't changed over the years. It's cod, salmon, tuna, prawns, and haddock. And they're always top five. And people really struggle to move away from that. And it's kind of sad because there's so many different other whitefish, and there's so many different local species. And what you tend to find is that in operators, they sort of struggle to sell, for example, trout. People have a perception of trout that it's this small little fish with the dodgy looking eyes that's vacuum packed and looking quite sad in the supermarket. But they kind of don't have that realization that, for example, our chalk stream trout, which is grown to a similar size to salmon, is a really tasty, lovely alternative. And it's grown in, you know, in Hampshire. So it's locally caught. But as soon as you put the word trout on the menu, it seems to make people very nervous. So people are trying to change. I think what they're trying to do, certainly in the fishing industry, is they're trying to get around that by using different names. And one of the ones is megrim soles, which people aren't generally aware of. And they're sort of trying to market it as Cornish sole because people understand sole, that's not as scary to them. So it's finding different ways of marketing and tapping into the consumer and getting them to think about something a little bit different. To avoid the reliance. And also from a sustainability perspective, you can't just keep eating the same five species all the time. You've got to diversify to take pressure off those species.
Aside from those five species, then, is there other species that you're noticing that consumers are really enjoying right now?
Is that they're sort of not enjoying. I just think there's this general lack of awareness. I don't know if you've been fortunate enough to go into any supermarkets in the continent and ever see their fish counters, but they're absolutely awash with such a variety of species. It's unbelievable what they seem to have access to. Seems to be that on the continent, the fish is introduced to people's diets maybe as a much younger age, and there's definitely less of an aversion to it. But I don't think it's so much that they're not enjoying them. It's that they're not giving them the opportunity to sort of try them and finding a market for them. So we end up exporting so much stuff over to the continent because there's just no market for it here. But where Brexit's caused some complexities in the export market, where they would have exported an awful lot of megrim sole to the continent in the past, as an example, that's a more difficult line for them now, which is why they're trying to find the UK market. I'm just hopeful that with the sort of, you know, advent of people, I think, taking more and more interest as to the authenticity of what they're eating and where it comes from and the provenance, that you'll start to see more of a shift towards seeking out those native species that we're catching, you know, down in the southwest and, you know, in the southeast and up off the northeast coast, and people will just start to diversify. But there is going to be some requirement for the operators to try and make that look more attractive, and we can help with that. I think one of the really important things you need to do is liken more unusual species with something they're familiar with. So I think with the older generation, there's this perception that coley, as an example, is a fish that used to feed to the cat. But it's a great whitefish species and it's really economical and it's from the same family as cod and haddock. So why won't people eat it? But then conversely, monkfish used to be called poor man's lobster and it was never valued as highly as it is now, whereas it's now a prime species. If that can move one way, why not coley? Why not megrim sole? Why not some of these other species that people generally don't eat?
Same question to you, Jodie, maybe from more of a like produce meat perspective. What are you noticing that consumers are enjoying right now?
What we're seeing people are really enjoying is the return of commuting. So post-pandemic, so many of us are adopting that hybrid working style and are spending a little bit of time in city centres where we haven't spent time. And I think that people are looking at more food-to-go sales, typically centred around lunchtime. I think we can all admit that we're undoubtedly a nation of sandwich lovers. Everybody has a sandwich. And there's an opportunity to really innovate with those fillings. I don't know whether anyone's seen on social media, it's gone wild over the last 12 months, but the chopped sandwich. We've always kind of layered our sandwiches and you start off with your butter and then something else and then your protein. And now it's almost like people are chopping it up and having it as a salad and then putting it on bread. And I've got to say, it looks incredible. Incredibly messy, I will also say. It's not one that you could probably eat at your desk without being told off, but they are impressive. And I think it shows how you can move away from that traditional sandwich and make it just look and taste that a little bit better and add a bit more experience to it. For that food to go occasion as well, superfood bowls, people are looking for authentic world flavors within there, things that link back to having better protein and different carb choices outside of your classic breads. I think they elevate that food to go occasion and people are willing to spend that little bit more on their lunchtime. And it also gives you an opportunity to start exploring some of those new trends. We've put so much into a wonderful dinner time, but actually lunch is equally as important. So food on the go is definitely things that people are getting excited about at the moment.
I'd love to get your take on this next question then, Natalie. What are the most exciting emerging trends in fresh food that chefs should be considering adding to their menus?
So a couple of things on this. There's a real continued love. I know this is not new, but it's certainly growing. There's a real continued love for sushi and sashimi. And sort of going back to what Jody just said about superfood bowls, these poke bowls that they do, and they use sort of, you know, raw salmon, raw tuna. And that's really, really popular. And I think that comes on the back of growth of some of the operators such as, you know, Sticks and Sushi and Kibu and Kokoro. There's continued growth in that area. And of course, you've now got sushi bars in the supermarket, sort of a retail environment now. So there's definitely, whilst I've spent the last part of this, you know, podcast talking about how non-diverse we are, we've definitely come a long way from sort of 20 years ago when people were just like, raw fish, that's just revolting. I'm just not going anywhere near that. So I think that's going to be something that continues. And it's great to see that. But I think what's really key is that, you know, people like us have to make sure we're providing the correct products. I know that some operators could be quite nervous because of the rules and regulations around serving fish raw. We've got the proper products to ensure that they comply with the HA requirements. So as long as your chefs understand what's needed from them, it's a great thing to incorporate into menus. And you see it actually now. Whereas there used to be just sort of pure sushi, sashimi places and food to go again, as Jody mentioned, you know, obviously, and the likes of Itsu and Wasabi. But there's also places like, you know, the Ivy Asia, where they're sitting sushi dishes alongside sort of classic Asian dishes. So it's definitely a market for it. I think one of the other things as well, which is it's growing and it certainly was mentioned last year as a trend, and I do think this ties in really well with the health and well-being, mind and matter, is that people should consider incorporating seaweed into their dishes because it's really healthy. Ideal for weight loss, apparently. Not tried it. Give it a go. Helps to replenish nutrients. And so it's a great option for a twist on sort of what typically would be salad or vegetables. It was traditionally harvested from wild stocks, but what we're finding now is the vast majority of it is actually farmed. And it's typically grown in sort of on sort of ropes or nets at sea or in tanks or ponds or land-based systems. And it's a rapidly growing industry. And apparently there's about 1 million tons of wild seaweed harvested every year. And the other great thing about it is when we're talking responsibly sourcing, seaweeds grow in like lots of different climatic conditions. So their cultivation has very minimal impact on the environment. So yeah, a couple of things there very much on the Asian trends.
Yeah, I'd say I've definitely seen a lot of sushi restaurants popping up. And I don't mind because I love sushi.
I'm the same. I'm obsessed with it. I could eat it all day, every day. It's just so expensive, but so worth it. And I think it's that clean eating, isn't it? I think when you eat sushi, it's very clean. It kind of satisfies a few different things. You've got the, as Jody says, that food to go. So it's quick, but actually it's really clean to eat. And it's kind of because it's a little bit higher in price bracket, it's sort of satisfying from that point. It's not like buying quick junk food. I think you feel like you've eaten well and it's a good clean protein. So And I think it's going to keep going that way. And I actually see it in my nieces. They're in their teens, but the younger of the two, she's been obsessed with sushi since she was about 6 years of age, and she absolutely loves it. And yeah, you're seeing it more and more. It's great to see people really going for it.
So Natalie, how are consumer preferences evolving when it comes to fish and seafood? And how do you feel that chefs can cater to these changing tastes?
I think one of the big things which just continues to grow in importance for the consumer is sustainability and responsible sourcing. It's interesting because the seafood sector is not really recruiting enough consumers to compensate for the loss of older core consumers. Sort of, there's been some research recently, and again, it was from Seafish, and they said that the over 65s buy twice as much as those under 34. But the younger generation are much more interested in the sustainability and the origin of their food. So I think where you're trying to, if operators are trying to sort of hit the mark where that's concerned, they need to be seeking out certified fish such as MSC, which is the Marine Stewardship Council, ASC, which is the Aquaculture Stewardship Council, and then you've got Global GAP, and then you've got BAP, which is Best Aquaculture Practice. And all of these sort of certifications give you a huge amount of assurance as to basically the welfare of the fish if it's farmed, or the sustainability of the wild stock if it's a wild fish and how it's been caught. And then they should be promoting this on menus, because if there's this drive now in the younger generation to really care about this stuff, and I think it's really true, they do care, then they need to be promoting this, and they should be looking at listing the origin and the catch method of wild fish, and they should be referencing the Marine Conservation Society Good Fish Guide, or speaking to your supplier and getting some advice as to what to put on the menu that you can really shout about. And Seafish did a fish as food report. This was where some of these stats have come from. And apparently UK seafood's in significant decline, and it's fallen sort of 22% from 2006 to 2022. And the decline sort of accelerated since COVID. So only the cheapest sort of seafood sector segments and species sort of showed any volume growth in 2023. So we need to push it forwards, make it more an interesting offer, push versatility, push the health benefits, push the sustainability, because I think that's where you're going to tap into the younger generation and hopefully avoid the decline.
So Jodie, what would you say are some of the biggest challenges facing the fresh food industry today, and where do you see the greatest opportunities for growth and innovation in the sector?
The biggest challenge single-handedly is extreme weather. We've had droughts, we've had floods, storms, heat waves. I think we love the idea that the sun has come out this week and it's really treated us, and we've had the hottest day in the UK this year so far. But last year we also had the hottest year, and that's in part due to natural weather cycles, but also human-induced climate change. And it can have a catastrophic impact on food, the supply, creating challenges for produce and livestock, and impacting growth conditions, causing crop damage and quality issues, things that we've not seen in such capacity. So heatflation is a term that I've been reading a lot about over the last few months, where the extremely hot weather has caused impact on fresh food, leading to an increase in price. And the World Economic Forum, they've said that heatflation is a major threat to food security, especially for the most vulnerable people in the world. And it'll affect consumers everywhere. So it's not just the intense heat that we have in the UK affecting our crops. We've had in the Mediterranean and North Africa, we had loads of winter crops had to be replanted because they didn't survive any of the scorching temperatures. And we've had fruit that's ripened quicker, and we have to get it out to consumers as quickly as possible. And it is creating a logistical headache as well as a supply issue. On the flip side to that as well, there's sogflation. I'm loving all of these terms, by the way, but sogflation, where the extremely wet weather is causing a lot of crop damage, particularly to our root veg in the UK. So potatoes, our potato supply in 2023 was ravaged, absolutely ravaged by a lot of the wet weather that we had. And in September, we had 7 consecutive days over 30 degrees. And we just ended up having to leave the potatoes in the ground that little bit longer. And it meant that as they've come out, the quality isn't as good, and it's affecting the yield forecasts for the following year. I think we've noticed it as well in supermarkets. When you go to the supermarket now, our pack sizes, they're slightly smaller on items like potatoes, but the price hasn't actually changed. So we're paying more per kilo for produce. And in a cost of living crisis, that can really hurt. To try and combat it, though, food producers are trying to look at climate resilient ingredients, and there are some new technologies out there that are going to help and help us get used to this warming world that we're living in. So we've got some of our fresh produce suppliers who are crossbreeding strawberries to try and find new breeds. And we've also got hybrids of lettuces. So suppliers are also jumping feet first into regenerative farming and looking at soil quality and allowing nature to heal itself. And any way that we can help with that is brilliant. Approaches to this, I think, are strong choices for food companies looking to reduce their environmental impact whilst also maintaining the supply in the food chain. It's something that we're going to have to get used to. The world is changing and we have to adapt and make sure that we have enough food for consumption.
Yeah, I definitely think I heard about cauliflower last year. It was like one of the crops that was getting really damaged by the weather.
Yeah, we had a photo that one of our buyers sent and it was just completely waterlogged. They couldn't get anything out. And it's devastating to see because this is people's livelihoods. And as well as the impact it has on the shelves, you see people and in the news like shortages of certain products, but we need to appreciate that whole journey, that whole cycle of fresh produce and of meat and of fish. It's living. It isn't something that you can manufacture. You have to wait for the seasonality. And I think that's another big thing as well. The seasonality is changing with a lot of these products because the weather is impacting when things are coming into season. And we are on a journey to continue to understand that year on year it can change. And we're trying to support our customers as best we can to make sure that their menus are seasonal, but we also have the supply.
Natalie, then, looking ahead, what do you predict will be the major food trends of the next 5 to 10 years? And how should industry stakeholders prepare for these changes, do you think?
So it's obviously with what Jody said about, you know, the changing climate, that's always going to be difficult. And that's really difficult to predict. And, you know, we've been so affected by so many things outside of our control over the last, crikey, 8 years, you know, be that, you know, the Brexit, the Ukraine war, the pandemic, and we never know when that's coming along. But sort of stripping it back, to taking any of that stuff out that we really don't know, I think that authenticity is going to be a big thing, which is the genuine representation of the dish's origin. And I think that's going to rank really high on consumer demands. It says 56%, I think it was in our trends report, 56% people agreed they'd be willing to pay more for a dish they perceive as more authentic. And you're seeing that reflected in some of the organisations that are set up, such as Authenticate, which is a platform that helps businesses map their sort of finished and raw products back to source. And that also enables them to monitor suppliers to ensure compliance and measure environmental, social and governance risk from anywhere in the world, which is, you know, also a huge thing in terms of ethical trade. I think operators are going to need to ensure they're using suppliers with strong ethics who, you know, employ and use and comply with those standards. And that's not going away. Definitely not going away. I think health and wellbeing is going to stay up there as key, as we've both agreed. I think operators need to be really well educated on the best way to address that through the menus that they offer. I think value for money is going to stay up there. Definitely people still looking for value for money. It's been a really tough couple of years with cost of living. So, we advise our operators to work with us. Let's see where we can implement any cost saving ideas, whether that's sort of via smaller portions or more value added options. You know, for example, you don't have to buy a poor quality frozen product. A lot of people perceive that that's frozen means poor quality. Not the case. We have a supplier we work with in the Northeast who produces bespoke fish cakes, and they're really rustic, you know, made by small business and can be made to the operator's recipe. So it's taking advantage of things like that. I think it's going to be a sort of growth in a demand for precision fishing methods, which is like the RAS systems, which are the online recirculation systems where they farm fish. Because when you farm fish on land, you negate all the issues relating to environmental damage and pollution and fish escapes. And things like, you know, more fun. We're seeking a supply line for this now, what we call our disco scallops, where they found out that if you put lights in pots, the scallops are attracted towards them and they go and jump into the pots, and it's got no environmental damage to the seabed through dredging, a really environmentally friendly way to to catch those species. And I think people are going to be looking at that far more because there's still a requirement to feed a growing population, but to feed it sustainably. On a more negative side, certainly for the fish industry, but I think it's going to be a big trend, is this friction-free trade, which I think is ever growing, which is, you know, instantaneous drive-throughs, self-serves, unattended retail, where you're not actually having much contact with a person in the transaction. You sort of see it now in your fast food, where you don't really order now at the counter. You go and order on a screen and then you pick it up when your number's called. And I think there's going to be a real increase in that. I also think this experiential type dining is going to be the way forwards, or just experiential going out. I don't think people necessarily are quite so driven to just go to a restaurant. I think they're looking at going out with friends and incorporating it into something, whether it's, you know, axe throwing or some of these crazy golf days that you have, where you dine, you drink there, but you know, you competitively socialize as well. So I think that's gonna continue, because there's definitely a demand for that, and you can see there's a lot of growth in that area at the moment. I think also these daytime cafes, which are in garden centres, which are, you know, sort of open just during the day, close early evening. There seems to be a real growth in that at the moment, and I think that will continue. So I think there'll be, and in terms of dining itself, I think there'll become a real gap between this sort of experiential and premiumized dining, and then the type of dining which is actually just to fill your stomach, basically. So it'll be very, very separate. There'll be, I think, a real sort of growth in, you know, market halls and just that very instant, quick, easy eating, refueling, social refueling, I think we call it. And then premiumized dining, which is more of an experience. And I think it'll be quite a clear division between the two. But yeah, I think that's some of the things that we're looking at over the next 5 to 10 years.
Perfect. Thanks, Natalie. I know it's difficult with fresh because it is quite an ever-changing sector. But Jody, do you predict any major fresh food trends in the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, I echo everything that Natalie has put forward as well. There's lots of different things that have happened over the last 5 to 10 years. So it can be difficult to predict the next 5 to 10. But I think we're in a very fortunate position in that we're nimble enough and agile enough to be able to jump on those when they're coming over the horizon. So we're conducting a lot of research at the moment to look at upcoming trends for 2025. So I won't reveal too much. Don't want to, you know, ruin the spoilers. But provenance, I think, is going to deepen. And we'll see more awareness of closer to home flavours and how the UK can take centre stage with that food sourcing, encouraging support for local producers, promoting responsible farming practices and fostering a real sense of appreciation of where our food comes from. I think people want to know, they want to see those accreditations. They want to know that the meat, the fish, the produce that they are purchasing is good, good for the environment and good for themselves. So we're excited to see how this influences the whole fresh category. And we will also be producing a 2025 juice report, which is our take on our fresh trends later on in the year. So watch this space.
And that's a wrap on today's episode of Talking Food with Bidfood. Thank you for joining us, Natalie.
No, thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
And thank you to you as well, Jody. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Anytime.
If you're keen to learn more about fresh food trends, please see the show notes for more information. We've also hosted a number of recent episodes on topics such as regenerative agriculture, sustainability, and school catering, which you definitely don't want to miss out on. You can go to our podcast feed to find them. Thank you for joining us for this episode. If you've enjoyed it and are hungry for more, please make sure you follow us so you don't miss out on all our exciting episodes to come, and feel free to share with your friends and colleagues. Until next time, goodbye.